Welcome back to Real Estate Investor MBA. My name is Jeremy Moyer, one of your hosts. So my co-host Tejas and I both like to start off our episodes with a huge thank you to all our listeners. We could not be doing it without you guys, so we do appreciate you. And if you have any questions that you want us to address specifically about on an episode, or if you want us to review a certain topic, please send those requests to jeremy@realestateinvestormba.com. Please also be sure to check out our new website at rei.mba. All of our content is there from past episodes. We also share news articles about industry-related topics, etc. And if you have interest in staying in contact with us or working with us on a project, please feel free to sign up for our newsletter. It's free to do so. Also, follow us on social media. We're all over Facebook, LinkedIn. We have a YouTube channel that's pretty popular. Definitely check us out on there. And for our guests today, we have had Isabel Guarino-Smith on. So Isabel is a graduate from Arizona State University, a former flight attendant, Walt Disney World intern, and now Residential Assisted Living Academy's leading lady. So she's been working as the COO of the company for the last 6 years, keeping everyone in line and on task. She's been featured in many magazines and articles on the topic of senior housing, and most recently was given the title as one of the top influencers in senior housing today. Isabel also won Aging Media's The Future Leaders of Assisted Living Award in 2020. So I just came out of this great interview with Isabel just a few minutes ago. Wow, it's really interesting. It's a super niche space, residential assisted living. But as we were talking, you know, it just got me thinking, like, this is real. You know, every community has, and every family has family members that are aging that might need assisted living at some point, and costs just keep going through the roof. So it's very interesting how she has capitalized on this opportunity and also positioned herself within the industry. And we dive through a ton of questions, and she's very giving on the answer. So it was a very interesting episode. I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy. Cheers. Welcome back to Real Estate Investor MBA. We're really excited for the guest that we have with us here today. It's Isabel Guarino-Smith. Isabel, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Happy to be here.
And we're glad to have you. So Isabel, for folks who are not familiar with you, can you spend just a few minutes telling us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in real estate?
Of course. So I really started through my dad. My dad was a real estate investor for 40 years, doing all sorts of different things. And when his mom fell and broke her hip, and the doctor said, hey, she needs assisted living 24/7, like she cannot go home alone, we were like, okay, what do we do? You know, we put her in a big box facility, we give her in-home care. We were just searching and searching for a good option for her, found nothing that we liked. Everything was terrible, and kind of stumbled into residential assisted living. So senior housing in a residential setting. And since my dad was a real estate investor, he, you know, ended up purchasing the property, purchasing the business. And me, from an outside perspective, started seeing, you've been unhappy dealing with tenants and toilets, dealing with all this drama for years, making money, but being so stressed about it, to like overnight being super happy and really just loving what he was doing and cash flowing like crazy. And so I started to be like, tell me more, what's going on here? And really kind of pushed my way into his business. And for the last 10 years, I worked side by side with him in the senior housing space in residential assisted living, honestly, just because I saw what a change it was for him and then what an impact it had on my family, the cash flow involved. So kind of a strange story, but I started through my dad and his experience and what happened to him. And I was like, give me more, what's going on here? So, but it's been a lot of fun.
That's really interesting. That's probably one of the more interesting stories I think I've heard on how someone's got involved in real estate. It just seems to flow. Like, it seems to make sense very organically on how it all came to fruition, right? So for the show today, for all the listeners, so we brought Isabel on. She's an expert within the residential assisted living space. We haven't actually had a guest on to talk about this space, so we're really, really excited to have you with us today to talk through this and unpack some questions, you know, that I have, that I'm sure our listeners have as well. So let's start off, I think, at the most basic level. Let's just discuss what's assisted living. And then I'm curious the difference between assisted living and like the nursing home, and then even like the big box assisted living facilities. So maybe you can kind of just tackle all that in one.
You got it. Dive right in. So what we do is residential assisted living. So assisted living is just where you need help with activities of daily living. Pretty much anything that you do from the moment you get up out of bed to the moment you go to bed, like bathing, brushing your hair, brushing your teeth, eating, toileting, you know, walking, all those different things that we take for granted, you know, as healthy younger people. Once you get older, you start to lose those things. things. And once you need help with those, it's no longer safe for you to live alone. So you need assistance. So they call it assisted living, right? So big box facilities, that's what we coin, like the Brookdale, the Sunrise, the Atrium, those big facilities that we often think of when we hear the word assisted living. That's not what we do. They offer the same services as what we do, but it's a big box. And I didn't grow up in a big box, and I don't want to age in a big box. You know, I want to stay in a residential home, something more common and familiar to me where I can get better care, you know, better attention. And it's really costs the same. So for me, you know, and for our family and our company, we focus on residential assisted living. So it's the same 24/7 care, help with activities of daily living. You're still getting a private bedroom, private bathroom, but it's in a residential home in a single family neighborhood, where the ratio might be 4 residents to 1 caregiver or 5 to 1. In a big box, it's typically 15 to 1. I've seen 25 to 1. It's pretty vastly different. So the level of care for me is a lot greater in a residential assisted living home. Now, a nursing home or nursing facility, that's where you need medical attention. So doctors, nurses, IVs, gurneys, someone may leave an assisted living facility or a residential assisted living home to go into a nursing home if and when they need that. Their medical needs are too great for what assisted living can offer. So kind of 3 different things, but the best comparison to what we know as assisted living, you know, it's still that. It's just in a single family home.
Interesting. Okay. Now, is there licenses or regulations, rule? I mean, I'm sure with anything with health related, I'm sure it comes, there's at least something. So can you just speak to that a little bit?
Yes. So the physical home needs a license, and it's mostly about the safety of the residents. So it doesn't have to be ADA compliant, but you want it as close to that as possible, meaning ramps, guardrails, handrails, anything that's going to make it really nice and safe for the seniors, not a bunch of different flooring or a ton of stairs, right? Like all those things that are going to keep it nice and safe for a senior. So the license on the home is going to be based on square footage, safety, things of that nature. And the state will license that home for you. They basically send the fire marshal over and you get the stamp of approval, or he says, add this, add that, you know, and I'll come back. The licensed administrator is who's kind of running the operations, the day-to-day, because as real estate investors, we don't know what is supposed to, you know, be happening with the seniors. That's not our expertise. We're not medical professionals. So that licensed administrator is your key player who you're going to be hiring, who's running all the day-to-day operations in the business, hiring and firing the caregivers, bringing in the independent contractors, dealing with tours, like inviting the families in, touring them, making sure it's a right fit, you know, welcoming the residents, all of that good stuff. They could be doing a whole laundry list of things. It depends on what you want to do and what you want them to do. They really could do it all or just a couple things, depending on how hands off or on you want to be. The other license in the home is the caregivers. Those are licensed caregivers. They're licensed through the state as well. Every state has different requirements on what the caregivers have to know and where they have to be in that. The home has a license. The administrator has a license. The caregivers have a license. You, as the owner operator, don't necessarily have a license, but there are a lot of licenses involved.
Gotcha. Okay. So is the administrative individual, is that very similar to a property manager? I'm thinking like multifamily world, like at least investors can start to unpack this in their head. Is that a safe comparison?
It's the closest comparison I can say for anyone who knows real estate. Okay. The main difference is that it is a medical license, right? So like they have, gotcha. It's not just about the real estate. It's also about the care of the residents, what the caregivers are supposed to know, all of that. But you might be giving them duties that you would give a property manager.
Okay. Now, and then rental payment, is it typically private pay or is there insurance that comes involved? Does the administrator handle all? Like, what does that typically look like?
Yeah. So if a senior has long-term care insurance, which right now I want to say about 10% of the population does, if they have that, that's an incredible way to be able to pay for your care needs towards the end of life. Mm-hmm. So if they have it, fabulous. Medicare, Medicaid, VA benefits. But honestly, most people are paying with cash, savings, their IRAs, their investments, or they're selling their home and using that capital to pay for it. I will also say there's a lot of seniors who are relying on their adult children to foot the bill for them. And the average rate in America today is $4,500 a month. So it's per person.
Wow.
So it's not cheap. If you think about it, you and I right now, it's like your home, your house, your car, your kids, your food, your fun. It's probably more than $4,500 a month, right? So it's not that crazy to think this person gets a private bedroom, private bath, full-time care, someone literally showering them, wiping their bum, doing everything, right? A chef, someone's doing their laundry, keeping their home clean. I mean, it sounds pretty good to me, actually. I'd move in for $4,500, but that's the cost of care. That's the average cost. So depending on your state, city, or area, it could be way higher or less, right? But in general, it costs a pretty penny if you need assisted living care, and most people need it for at least 3.5 years. So it's a large chunk of change. And if you're relying on your kids, you better hope one of your kids is doing well, because they're not going to be putting you in that nice of a home if they're not.
Right. That makes sense. Let's just say someone's listening and just jiving with them, right? Like this, they love that number, you know, and they're like, this looks like a great niche. It's something different. Maybe they're used to multifamily or self-storage and they're looking to offset their portfolio with something slightly different, right?
Yeah.
And this sounds compelling, you know, so is it as easy as finding a ranch home? Or I'm sure single level home is better just because of the whole stairs and everything. But finding a home in a residential neighborhood and they line up these people that have these licenses and they just buy it and they operate it as such. I mean, I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but is it as easy as that?
More or less, you're on the right track, right? So on the single level, you can do multi-level. You add in a residential elevator or chairlift. It's 30 to 50 grand one time, but you're going to make that back in a couple months. So it's worth it all day. But single level is preferred. And then, yeah, the steps to do this is really choosing which of the four routes you want to take. So building custom from the ground up, converting a single family home, leasing a home, working with someone who's going to own and renovate the home and you're going to operate the business, or buying an existing one. So kind of which of the four routes, making sure obviously the location's correct, the numbers are correct, everything's there, getting the home licensed, hiring your staff members, and filling it with seniors. And then all of that stuff is hands-off. That's not hands-off. That's very hands-on to get it up and running. But once it's running smoothly, you can start to back away as the owner and run it more passively, more hands-off. So more or less, I mean, we do a full training on this, so there's obviously a lot of steps. Sure. Yeah. More or less, that's like the basics of how to do this. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, being in the industry, and this is super niche, right? So out of those four that you mentioned, which is your favorite? I mean, I'm sure the details matter, right? But just face value of looking at those four, like what do you see the biggest opportunity in, or what's you have the most control over? What do you prefer if you had your choice?
Great question. So honestly, I think I'm tied between two of them. And it's funny because in my opinion, they're the opposites. So one of the fastest ways to get into this is buying an existing one. So I like that because of the speed to cash flow. The cons of that is there's already seniors in the home. So you can't really renovate that home. You're buying it kind of as is, and there's not much that you can do. You can only really renovate one home at a time when a senior passes on. Okay, I can change that floors and paint that, but like you can't do a kitchen reno. You can't really shut down the house. So I like it for the speed, but I don't like it because you're kind of stuck with the product. On the other hand, my other favorite would be custom builds. Our students who have done custom builds, I mean, those homes are spectacular. They are so beautiful. Most states, you're allowed to have between 6 and 16 residents in the home. And because most seniors want private bedrooms, private bathrooms, like in Illinois and Texas, where you're allowed to have 16, you're not going to find a 16 bedroom single family home anywhere, you know, unless it's 50 cents home, like you're not gonna find it. So you're probably going to have to renovate or custom build. So our students in places like that who've custom built 14 bed, 14 bath homes with movie theaters and hair salons and living rooms and massive kitchens. I mean, the homes are incredible. And so I really like that for that aspect, that it's like, it's custom suit to build. It's ready to go for the seniors. It's super safe. It's gorgeous. It's brand new. So I'm torn between those two, because this one, I like the product better, but this one, I like the speed better.
Sure. That makes sense. I guess this question might relate to all of these really, because it's more in due diligence. But if you're going to build and looking for land, land, does it need to be zoned specifically for this use, or is the zonage use, so the zone usage, is it more broad than that? And the residential assisted living fits within a certain zone?
Most of the time, it's still zoned residential. It doesn't switch to commercial. Certain cities or states will have like a funky rule where it's like, yeah, you have to zone it this one little thing, but it's typically still residential because like our homes are in regular neighborhoods. There's the neighbors have two kids and a dog and the mom and dad, like they're normal homes. We've just converted them to become more bedrooms and bathrooms. So it's still residential, but some cities and counties will have a little bit of difference.
Okay. And you don't have to worry about parking, I guess, right? Because
most of the seniors aren't driving.
Cars. Yeah.
Yep. The caregivers who are coming and going, you want to have enough space for them to be parking. That's another rule like that. Some of the states will say, hey, for every four residents, you need to have one parking spot. Mm. Okay. I mean, my own personal home has six parking spots outside. Yeah. It's like, that'd be fine, you know?
So yeah, I can swing that. Yeah, that's easier. Okay. That is the on-site medical professional, the medical professional that's going to provide services, are they 24/7? Is someone living there?
Great question.
Yeah. Or do they rotate? Yeah.
Yep. So the caregivers, you can do live in, but you can also do shift work. And I prefer shift work because when you do live in, it's kind of tough. If someone like no shows for that, are you then just going to rely on them? Or what if you need to fire them? And now it's like they're living there. Now you're putting someone out on the streets as well as firing them. It just gets really complicated really fast. So I prefer shift work, 8, 10, or 12-hour shifts. So if you have one home, they're probably working in your home 3 or 4 days a week, and then they're probably working in the guy down the street's home the other 3 or 4 days a week. But if you have multiple homes, you can share those resources, and they can be working 3 or 4 days for you here and 3 or 4 days for you here. You're not paying overtime, and they're still getting their full 6 or 7 days that they want to be working anyways.
Okay, so they're not employees, a more like contract work, is that
the caregivers are employees? They're W2.
Okay. Yeah.
The administrator is probably more like a contractor, like a 1099, something else. It depends on how you want to set it up, how many homes they're overseeing. I hate the word it depends, but it really just does depend on how you set it up.
So is there a limit on how many of these type of homes one could own in a certain area? Maybe that depends on the state, but
not that you could own as the owner operator. One of our students has 25 of these over in Colorado. Another student has 10. I want to say he's in the Midwest somewhere. Another one of our ladies had 9 in New Mexico. I mean, you can have as many as you want. The administrator, some states do have a limit on how many homes their license can be hung on. Mm-hmm. So like they may only allow to have their license hung on 3, which is fine because then if you have more homes, right, you'll get another set of 3 and another admin for that, and another set and another. And then you could have one who is overseeing all of them if you're if you're growing that large, if you're going to scale, like the gentleman who has 25 homes in Colorado. That's how he does it. He has a whole administrator team who's each overseeing a couple and then someone overseeing them.
Okay. How do you go about finding the administrator or even the medical professionals that do this type of work? Is just putting job postings out there on Indeed or whatever? Or is there like specific ways to there's more direct ways to find the right people, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
You can definitely do job ads, job postings, things like that, but also networking. Within the residential assisted living industry, it's a very tight-knit industry. So speaking with people who are placement agents, geriatric doctors and nurses, elder law attorneys, long-term care insurance people, hospice people, they may be able to tell you, hey, yeah, I know of Sally over at that home and she's super unhappy. She might be willing to switch, and just kind of like networking and chatting with people. Also remembering that, you know, I mentioned in the beginning, the ratio of the big box facility versus our homes, right? A 15-1. That caregiver is going to burn out quick. Mm-hmm. And that's where you see instances of elder abuse or people being left overnight when they had bed sores or they fell. And then, you know, it's like all this terrible trauma is happening, not because the caregivers don't care, because they literally do not have the time and energy to be able to service that many people at once. Have to take care of one and then hurry, get to the next and get to the next. And if you're the 15th one, you're screwed. Right. It sucks. It's terrible the way it's set up in big facilities. So when you take a caregiver who's there, who got into this industry because they genuinely care for people and they genuinely want to help seniors, and now they're in a scenario where they can't. They're literally hands tied behind their back. They're trying as hard as they can, but they can't. And you put them over in a residential assisted living home and say, you're going to hang out in a luxury upscale 5-star home. I'm going to feed you 3 meals a day. You have to take care of 4 seniors at once. They're like, sign me up right now. You know, you're getting paid the same. It's like when people talk about, oh, the great resignation and you can't find good employees. It's like, we have to do better for our employees. We have to love them more, appreciate them more, give them an opportunity where they actually can succeed. If we're setting people up to fail, who wants to go to a job every day where they feel like they're failing? That's terrible. So we have to change it all. And I think that's why I'm so passionate and love this industry, because not only is it a great real estate investment and play in that regard, but this affects so many families, like it affected my family. I know it's going to, some of your listeners might be going through this with their own seniors in their lives. And then you can literally change the caregiver's lives by providing them a quality opportunity to actually do the job that they want to do.
That's so awesome. As you were talking, just a question popped in my head. Insurance, like not only is this real estate, it's also like it's a service business, right? Yeah. So is there different types of insurance operators or building owners would need to own instead of just normal property insurance, you know, if they had multifamily renters in it?
Yes. So like liability insurance for sure. In our training, we definitely like set people up with the right companies who know what this is and know how to protect them, their staff, and the residents, because liability is everyone's number one question. Whoa, I don't want to be involved in that. So having that insurance, having that protection, and then like we talked about, renovating and retrofitting the home to eliminate as many fall risks as possible. And when you have a 4-to-1, you know, ratio, it's, you notice things happening and you can keep your eyes on those seniors. It's different than when it's, you know, massive ratios. It's impossible to watch 25 people at once. Mm. So the risk over there is so much greater than it is in a smaller home. So eliminating all of those risk factors and then setting yourself with liability insurance, vital. Absolutely.
No, that makes sense. What would you say like the toughest aspect is about getting started in this space in residential assisted living?
I think in any business, your toughest thing is going to be people. And it's not necessarily the seniors. I do think it's like the caregivers, the families. You know, many families, when they bring their loved one, you know, into an assisted living environment, they might not know everything that their loved one actually needs. They may not know how bad their situation is, you know, and so you have to really over communicate with, we call it the daughter Judy, right? The adult child who's bringing their loved one into your home. You have to over communicate with her and make sure that you're meeting her where she needs, or else she's going to cause drama. She's going to be upset. She's not going to be happy. You really have to like lay it out and be super open and honest with her about what you can provide, the issues that her loved one might be facing, and where your knowledge and limits stop, so that she's not expecting something that you're not able to give.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, that people can be sometimes the most challenging, right? That makes sense. I probably have 100 more questions. And I know we're running out of time. I think we're going to have to do a part two at some point. No, I love having you on. So, you know, I'm sure as a listener, I'm super interested just learning more. And I'm sure others are as well. You know, you mentioned trainings that you do. So in closing as well, can you let our listeners how they can get a hold of you if they're more interested in your trainings or whatnot? You know, feel free to share whatever you want to share.
Yeah. So we do live 3-day trainings in Phoenix, Arizona, 6 to 8 times per year. But to just get started for free, we've got free books, webinars, or a phone call with me or my team members at ral101.com. That's a great first place just to kind of dig a little deeper, gather that information. And then if coming out to a course is the right next step for you, we'd be happy to have you guys out.
That's tremendous. Awesome. Thanks so much, Isabel. Once again, thanks so much for your time. I'm Jeremy Moyer with Real Estate Investor MBA. Please be sure to tune in with us next time. We'll see you then. Cheers.